I don't think we're gonna have a problem because
No, I mean, it's you, it's me. It's like a very meaty movie. We'll be
absolutely.
fine.
Hello and welcome to My Streaming Bubble, the podcast where I talk about the shows I love with the people I tolerate. I'm the one and only Jen, your host, and today I'm thrilled to welcome back to the bubble half of the podcast Bedwetter Behead, Carla. And she's here because she watched a movie, recommended it, and I watched it, and it was great, and so here we are. So today we're here to talk all about a modern take on Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster, written and directed by Bomani J. Story. And since this is being recorded during the writer's strike, I just need to give a quick shout out to all the writers and all the actors that not only put work into this movie, but everything else we consume, because without them, we wouldn't be here. So thank you. And there will be links in the episode description on ways that you can show your support. So now that that's out of the way, hi, Carla. Welcome. And thank you for suggesting this movie.
Hi, Jen. Thank you for watching it and for having me back on to talk about it, because I have been just like dying to talk to somebody about it. And honestly, there are a few people I would love to talk about it more than with you, because I feel like you and I are on the same wavelength on a lot of things. And I think that we will both really, you know, like dig into this and, you know, play around with its guts to go around to go with the theme.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I remember you had like tweeted about it, and then you mentioned it, I think, when we were doing like a pop culture thing on for It's a Fandom thing.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, so I made a mental note, jotted it down. And then it just happened to be available through the library this week. So I got to save the $4 and rent it through the library.
Awesome. Shout out to libraries.
Hell yeah. So otherwise, I think it's available on like for rent on various streamers. So, but also check your local library.
Yes, definitely do that.
So as I've said, and as listeners may know, Carla is one half of Bedwetter Behead. And so, Carla, would you like to tell us a little bit about your podcast and where it can be found and all that good fun stuff?
I would love to, Jen. Bedwetter Behead is a podcast that I co-host with my bestie Meg, and we drink and we talk about TV shows and movies. And we were going to talk about books, but then we decided we're too busy to read. And we, you know, we it's FMK, so we decide who gets the ring, the fling, or the murder. And then we sometimes fight with each other about why the other is wrong. And, you know, spoiler alert, Meg's always wrong, even when I say that she's right.
It's such a fun podcast. I love listening to it. I love being on it. And it's always a good time. And I love the you can definitely tell the best friend banter and the bickering between you two, which makes it, I think, just that much more fun and engaging to listen to.
Thank you.
It also helps that I know you guys. So.
Right.
But
it's definitely like sitting in a room with us, because, you know, we don't alter our anything at any time, really. We're just who we are. What you see is what you get.
Yep.
Or what you hear is what you get.
Yeah, so make sure you check out Bedwetter Behead, found on almost all podcast players. It's a hoot. You're going to love it. But until then, make sure you stick around and you're listening to this one first.
Yes, definitely do that.
Yes, because this is going to be a great episode. I'm super excited. So as I said, this is the movie The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster. It stars Lea de Leon Hayes as Vicaria, Chad L. Coleman as Donald, Denzel Whitaker as Kengo, Riley Brooke Stith as Aisha, Idem Etsu Swanzi, I apologize, as Chris / Creature. And again, written and directed by Bomani J. Story. And this like premiered at some movie film festivals and was well received. It has more people need to watch it and give it a proper rating on IMDb, because right now it's only got like 5 stars out of 10 out of like 724 rating.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's dumb. So everyone make sure you go watch the movie and then rate it accordingly, appropriately, which should at least be a 7 or higher.
Give it 15 stars to, like, you know, bump it up sufficiently.
That's right. So,
I don't know that you can, but you could try.
all right. So, what IMDb says, because, spoiler warning slash brief synopsis of the movie. What IMDb says, Vicaria is a brilliant teenager who believes death is a disease that can be cured. After the brutal murder of her brother, she embarks on a dangerous journey to bring him back to life. What I says about this movie is now I kind of want to go and watch like all the Frankenstein like movies and shows because out of kind of all the old school creature monsters, like Frankenstein, I probably know the least about. Like my image of Frankenstein has always been from Monster Squad and just like that gentle giant and just kind of sweet. And I think so, yeah, that's all I've ever known. You kind of get that in this movie as well. And I just, let's just get into it. Holy shit. Okay.
Let's dive right in.
Yeah, let's go for it. So, Carla, what are your general thoughts on the movie and what kind of drew you to want to watch this? Because this is a fairly new movie.
Yeah. And it doesn't, it's not like it doesn't have mega stars in it. It doesn't have a ton of publicity. It's out well before Halloween, so it doesn't even get like that boost from the Halloween season. But a friend of mine actually sent me the trailer on Twitter. Now, I know it's called X now, but I'm gonna meet them halfway and call it Zwitter. I'm not giving into the X BS. It's still Twitter to me, but I'll meet you halfway, bro. Zwitter. So he DM'd me on Zwitter, which I'm barely on anymore, but I'm glad that I went on that day and saw the trailer. And I saw the trailer and I fell in love with the premise. And then I sent the trailer to like my sisters and just to like a bunch of people. And as soon as it became available, I decided I need to check this out. And what made me interested in watching it at all is that it's a almost entirely black cast. It's from the point of view of black people, directed and created by black people, which is so important because I think, we get tired of rehashes and retellings and reboots and all of the re's, but I do like seeing things from a different perspective. And I think that this is such an important take on the movie. It's set in an inner city, and there are there's the drug trade involved, there's like gang activity, and at the center of all of this is a young girl who just desperately wants her family back. So, with the original Frankenstein movie being more about wanting to play God, I feel like this is more about the desperation of having your family taken away in brutal ways in a world where you are so oppressed that often people turn to things that are clearly not good for them. So I just wanted to see what it was like, and I was not disappointed. Like when I finally, and I bought the movie. Like as soon as it came out, I'm like, I am owning this. I don't care. I hope it doesn't suck, but I'll support it because I want there to be more of this. Even if, again, if it sucks, maybe it'll it's it, if it has a success, somebody else will be inspired to do more, and there will be funding for it because of my $14. Well, if Carla gave $14, I mean, it must be worth funding more of these.
Well, I definitely think so. I definitely think it was worth the $14. I debated on whether or not I was going to buy it on digital or not because I'm always kind of worried, like, oh, yeah, what if I end up not liking it? And I mean, it's $14, so it's not like the end of the world by any means. But at the same time, it's just like, but what if it sucks? I can't get
Hey,
my,
in
I
this
can't,
economy,
right? I was like, I can't just like go to Voodoo headquarters and return it. Like, that doesn't exist. But after watching it, I was like, I would have been just fine with having if I had bought this. So I still might because it is really good. I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed these characters. I loved this like take on Frankenstein. And as you said, kind of a little bit of that switch from, the playing God to what she thinks is curing a disease. And I just kind of loved this concept of death as a disease. At one point, she says cancer is a symptom. And I was like, she's not really wrong.
Right, yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting take on just kind of her view of death and how she thinks she can cure it. So it's like, it's still a little bit on like mad scientist-y level, but then you see her reasonings behind it. And also that she's a 17-year-old girl and you can't blame her for wanting to cure this disease. So yeah, watched it, loved it. Like I watched the trailer. I thought the trailer was amazing. I thought it did a really, really good job just setting everything up and kind of letting you know what you're in for. And then the movie itself was so good because it's like there's some parts that are a bit graphic and kind of icky, you know, so that like gore and horror and everything. But I didn't think it was like excessive or hard to watch. It was just, it was there because I think of the genre. Like,
right. Yeah. I didn't feel like needlessly gratuitous.
Yes.
Like sometimes the movies can't. And the thing is, like, I think it didn't even go as far as it could have gone, which I'm grateful for.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But it definitely went to some place where I was like, whoa.
Yeah. So yeah, I loved it. I loved it. It was so good. And like I said, the performances were amazing. The actress that plays Vicaria, I loved her so much. She's a genius. And it's like, you know what? Genius teenage black girl into steam, stem, biology, resurrection. Like, I love it. And I support it.
Yeah, same. I mean, like, the fact that they use a teenager, because it could have, you know, aged it up and gone with like a, I don't know, like an MIT student or something like that, or just somebody who was in college or whatever. They went with a kid. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. So Vicaria, she is, like I said, a genius. And I love that the movie just kind of starts off like she's already snatching up bodies. Like it's kind of known in the area. So I love that we kind of just jump into it and we don't spend too much of the movie building up to her starting to do that. You know what I mean? Like the intro gives it all, like just kind of lays it all out and she drags her brother's body away and it's like, oh my God. So I really appreciated that, just kind of getting right into it, because it's not that was necessarily the focus, you know what I mean, of how she comes to do this, but just that she did it and then kind of these repercussions of it with how Chris behaves and everything. So how much did you love Vicaria and and just her like adorableness and her strength, a lot of strength and her brilliance?
Yeah, I mean, I love her so much. Like I wish that, I don't wish that like people went around collecting bodies. That's not
correct.
A wish that I have for the youth. But I do love her curiosity, her sense of excitement about science. Mm-hmm. And her fearlessness in correcting her teacher, which I think, like, for me, there was a lot about the scenes with the teacher where, I mean, it's clearly there to bring up issues that Black kids have in predominantly white schools, and especially with white teachers. And so all of that plays into this, but she doesn't care. She's like, you're just wrong. You know, what do you want me to do about it? Like, it's not my fault that you're wrong. You know, like, maybe you should go back to school a little more if I'm correcting you. But the way that the teacher takes offense at it, and it happens, I think, so often, like with very bright kids, there are so many teachers with egos who just refuse to accept the fact that they may not have all of the answers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like that part right there really made me just like root for her immediately. Her relationship with Jada, the little girl, I think is so sweet. Mm-hmm. Where they're buddies and Jada's helping her study, is helping Vicaria study chemistry, which I think is funny because then their sister, her sister Aisha, is telling her to go redo her ABCs, and it's like, she can do chemistry. Like, why are you sending her to do her ABCs?
And the way Jada reads her ABCs, just staring at her mom like, hey, it's like, how old is this girl? Why is she reading from a board book? I know.
It's like, she's already way ahead of you. I don't know what you're doing. But just her, she's so, Vicaria is so loving and sweet. And all of this science stuff is, or all of this pursuit of reanimating her brother is, I don't know that this passion for science would have existed necessarily without her using it as a means to reanimate her brother, or who knows, maybe it would. But it's just a fascinating character. Plus, she's adorable.
Oh, she's absolutely adorable. Yeah, the teacher scenes, like, as much, like, dude, that teacher fucking sucked. I hated her so much. So I loved seeing Vicaria just, like, not be afraid to stand up to her and, like you said, correct her. And the teacher just, like, honey, you're the grown-up. Be the fucking grown-up. Jesus Christ,
yes.
You're going toe-to-toe with a teenager because, again, of ego and all, and, you know, of ego and racism and, you know, all that stuff. And it was just so infuriating, but it also did kind of also act as like a reminder that this is like, this shit happens like all the time, every day, all day. And that's what I really liked about this movie was we take like the sci-fi bit of Frankenstein's monster and then put it into modern times with modern day conversations happening. Another kind of like modern day conversation that it currently exists is like that was shown in the movie is when Aisha's telling her son about real history and not the history that they're teaching in schools and this and that. And I was like, that is a very important conversation for parents of all kids to continue to have, because, you know, as a kid of like the 80s and 90s, like I didn't realize how whitewashed and bullshitty our history that we were given was. Like, you always kind of felt like,
like, this is just too tidy.
Stuff. Yeah. But then
it's hard,
like,
not to buy into it, because like the teachers are so certain when they tell you all of these things. And it's like, and this happened and then everybody was happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
Yeah. And it's like for me, not learning about the Tulsa Massacre until watching Lovecraft Country, because I'm like, this shit didn't actually happen, did it? And then of course after the episode I went to Google and I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And I was angry for a lot of reasons, and one of them being like, how the fuck did they just never tell anybody this?
Exactly.
I love that those conversations are part of this movie, a part of these families' conversations, and making sure that they are doing what they need to do to keep themselves educated and kind of one step ahead of the system that's going to try and keep them down. So again, the sci-fi story in modern times was brilliantly done, and the way that it all just really worked really well.
It does. And especially when you consider the way that so many things are being banned in education now. Mm-hmm. To keep these stories from popping up, from becoming more widely disseminated. Like, they're trying to suppress the truth by keeping kids from learning about the history of racism, the history of slavery, and trying to, you know, make slavery into a cotton candy thing, or it's cotton, but where it's a thing where it's like, oh, but the slaves were happy. They're better off this way, which is demonstrably untrue.
What the fuck is happening with that?
Yeah. I know, exactly. And I live in Florida, so I'm like super outraged all the time about this. But yeah, it's like that. There's a horror story in there too. And having a movie like this where it confronts you with the reality that Black people live in, not because they don't deserve better, but because these are the conditions in which they have been placed systematically. And even Kango, you know, at one point says that he's like, I, you know, if they had, you know, mental health counseling and guidance counselors out here instead of police stations constantly, then maybe I would be, you know, a chemist. I could be doing something else, but things are what they are. So I'm just gonna be a drug dealer.
Yep.
Okay, very practical, Kango, but you know.
So while we're on, since you brought up Kango, can we talk about kind of Kango and Jamal? And we're just going to jump right into it. I did not see that twist kind of with those characters and their roles.
Yeah.
Like for a minute, I kind of like Jamal because there is that moment after they pull Vicaria inside because to make her work for Kango, and Kango gives Jamal a look, and Jamal's just like, ugh, and then stands up to hold the blade to Vicaria's throat. I thought that was kind of funny. So I was like, maybe he's not into like all of this, but he, and you know, And then you find out that like Tango comes in and like it is all about like letting Vicaria go and all of this stuff. And then I was kind of blown away. I did not see that coming. I was set and ready to hate Kango all the way through and have him be a villain-esque type person, at least through the eyes of Vicaria, right? Because that's how we're introduced and that's what we know of him, is that it's Kango's fault for what happened to Chris, to her brother.
Right.
So I was all set and ready to be mad at him. And by the end, I was like, I was mourning him. I was like, yes! Oh my God.
Who would have expected that twist in our emotions, right?
I did not. And even Vicaria, like especially Vicaria in that moment, and she does the tie the bandana thing after he's passed away, which I thought was really a really sweet, touching moment. And you kind of see that how her perception of Kango has changed. And
yeah,
there's even that brief moment with Kango right before they kind of him and Vicaria split up to get the sciencey stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he has that moment of almost like guilt and regret that like he apologized for sending Chris to do whatever the thing was that ended up getting him killed. And I was like, holy shit. He felt bad. He's felt guilt like this whole time. This isn't a new emotion, I don't think. Like,
right.
Like, and then we lose him.
I know, but I think
not
that
okay.
That's part of the beauty of this movie is that these characters are so much more complex.
Mm-hmm.
Than they would be made in so many other movies where it would just be like, okay, this is the drug dealer. He's the bad guy.
Yep.
This is his muscle. He's just dumb and just does whatever the drug dealer wants.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the hero. And therefore she's right about all of her perceptions of these bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
But it shows you how, you know, for all of her brilliance, Vicaria really is limited in her perception of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, understandably, she's very young. She's lived through trauma. I mean, her mother died while holding Vicaria in a very, very awful, brutal way, which, I mean, whenever I think of this movie, that's the first scene that pops into my mind because it really hits you. It doesn't show you at all in the trailer. It just tells you about Chris dying. It doesn't tell you anything about the mom.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're sitting there and you're watching that happen, it's a complete shock.
Yeah.
But her worldview is tainted in this way. Plus, she's too young to really have this concept of, you know, gray versus just black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And Kango, I ended up loving him, and I was like, damn it, now I love the drug dealer, because he is a drug dealer, but he's also taking care of his, I don't know if that's his mom or his grandma, who is like coughing up a lung in the other room. And he is, he's not a great person, but at the same time, like there are layers to him apparently that we don't find out until later.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamal isn't just some muscle. He has his own aspirations, and he's working for Kango because, you know, I'm assuming that Kango maybe pays him well, or maybe whatever his reasons are. But as soon as things are not going the way that he wants them to, he takes action, and that action happens to be taking a machete to Kango.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I interpreted when he got up from the table to go and threaten Vicaria is that, to me, it seemed more like he was exasperated at Kango for having to be the muscle. He's like, oh, so I'm just the guy with the machete, right? Like, I can't, you know, contribute more to this conversation. Like, fine, I'll go and like put the machete to her neck, whatever, bro. But Kango is just such a pragmatist. Like, he saw a way to get a brilliant person to make more supply for him. He's like, okay, we'll just use this as leverage. Mm-hmm. He saw, but he also has a heart. So, you know, she gives him back the drugs. She's clearly, you know, freaked out of her mind. He's like, okay, just let her go. Whatever. You know, like, what is she going to do? You know, she has apparently enough going on in her life.
Right.
And he could have just ditched and ran once Chris started coming after Vicaria. He didn't have to get that device and bring it to her.
Mm-hmm.
He could have just been like, see ya.
Mm-hmm.
But he did it. God knows why he did it, but he did it. So to me, it shows that like there's so much more to him than we're given.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one of the many brilliant things about this movie. It's like it gives you like characters, not just caricatures.
Yes. Yes. I completely agree. And yeah, that I loved it. Like I said, I was not expecting to love and root for Kengo the way I ended up, and then just kind of mourning him and everything. And so I love that it was, yes, more than just characters or character types that are just flat and two-dimensional. So I love seeing these little bits that there's more to Kengo than what we're initially given and what our initial opinions and thoughts on him were. So that's, I mean, that's amazing writing, right?
Yeah,
Brilliant
absolutely.
storytelling.
Like,
And it's like, and it's not, and I felt like it was like subtle and natural, you know what I mean? So it's not like these big moments of him kind of doing this 180 or what we thought was like a 180. It's like these are actual little bits of this character that's always been there, but again,
yeah.
we're seeing it through Makarya's eyes and her. And so that's just kind of what we initially take in. And then, yeah, with the sick relative, grandma, mother, or whatever, you're just like, see, there's a heart.
So
Cares. He was willing to stand by his word of letting Vicaria go when she returned the drugs that she initially stole, because you know, a bit of a man of his word, and there's nothing really bad about
hard.
that. So, and then yeah, with Jamal kind of taking that turn, and it was interesting too because initially when Jamal had told Kengo about Chris or seeing the creature. Kengo didn't really didn't believe him. So at first you're just kind of like, no, you need to believe Jamal, blah, blah, blah. But then when Jamal's attacked and he's got the marks on his neck, that's when Kengo's like, I fucking believe you, dude, but she's gotta go.
Yeah.
She has fulfilled like kind of one thing at a time.
Exactly.
And then yeah, the way Jamal kind of flipped in that moment, it's like, yeah, he's more than just dumb muscle, right? He's got his own wants and his own pursuits, as violent and revengey as they might be at this moment, but he's more than just someone that's going to follow along. And in his eyes, this was the right thing to do. Try to murder
Right.
Vicaria. But he was willing to stand up for what he thought was right.
And stand
And
up to his supposed boss. And I
exactly.
love that beat when he confronts Kengo and he just kind of like steps to him and Kengo backs off because you see that dynamic that you never see in movies, which has always bothered me that this guy is lethal and you're ordering him around like he's some clown. He could actually, why isn't he fed up and just turns around and like hacks you up? I've never understood it. I'm glad that they kind of addressed it with this movie. Because yeah,
Absolutely.
like look at the way that this guy's treating you. Like you're gonna just take it.
Yep. And yeah, because
Jamal
like
does not.
no, and you know, he spends a good part of like the movie kind of chasing, trying to find Vicaria. Like the few
Yeah.
other times we see him, it's he's going to grab Vicaria to bring her to Kengo to quote work. So yeah, that was really fun in that
Yes.
like unconventional, non-traditional kind of way with characters and kind of our expectations versus the reality and how just brilliant and beautiful it was done. So
Yes, absolutely.
yeah, I'm still kind of like blown away with the whole Kengo thing because I was just like, are you fucking
I know. I know. I did not see that coming at all because, like, the way that she talks about him and everything. I mean, he points a gun at her towards the beginning of their interactions. I didn't expect to be like, oh, not Kengo. Who could have expected that, honestly? Like, really?
No, I not at all. Oh my God. All right. So I just had to get that out of the way because that was one of the big things. I was just like, ah. Let's see. Talking about Jada, I just have to add that all small children in horror movies are creepy. I don't
Yeah.
care who you are, what you're doing, any because when she's like, oh, talking to Chris, the way she's laughing, the
Yes.
little like it seemed, and then she's just like making eye like locked eye contact with Makaria as she's like saying all these things just in a creepy way. And I'm like, that's its own subgenre of horror is little kids. Because
Yeah.
Like,
oh my gosh.
At first I was really
Especially
kind of creeped
after,
out. Yeah.
yeah, no, it's Jada, especially after she meets Chris, she gets super creepy. She goes from like this cute little girl who's just reading off, helping Vicaria learn chemistry, periodic table of elements stuff, to creepy little girl who, I have a secret friend.
And seriously, her laugh was like classic creepy kid horror movie giggle. I was like, oh, she fucking
Yes.
nailed that because I am unsettled. And
Yes. But Vicaria herself, when because she has like the mad scientist giggles when she figures out like the whole electricity thing, and she's sewing Chris together and getting him ready for the lightning or whatever, which is actually just a lot of electricity in this case. But she has like the especially because she has the broken glasses. She has one less lens that's broken. The glasses are taped up, and she is just giggling in like the creepiest way. Oh man, like that really was like
Just
it's so messed up.
a wonderful little mad scientist moment for her. So
Yes.
I don't know why I couldn't not look at like the broken glasses, because yeah, it starts off with just one lens, so you're just kind of like, and like the meaning and the metaphors and everything behind that, because I'm just like, it's like, okay, so it's like her vision is cracked, right? Half of it. So she's like half mad scientist but half like logical, and then they split in half and then
Yeah.
they're taped up that way. So I was like, now she's just kind of holding on to these two idea, like I thought I read way too much into the glasses. I don't know
No,
if
I
you
think that's a
did.
brilliant interpretation.
Okay.
Like, I think that's absolutely brilliant because, yeah, absolutely. Like, on the one hand, she's a brilliant science girl, and she sees objectively that her father's going down the wrong path because he's torn up about her brother passing. She is also trying, she's missing a lot of school because she's helping Aisha to stay on track with her studies. And she's doing like all of these things that in her world and in her mind make sense, but she's also trying to reanimate a corpse. So, which is like, that comes from a very cracked worldview.
It sure
Like,
does.
I don't know that most people would just be like, hey, how about I just, pull my brother's body into this like abandoned thing, which by the way, why didn't she refrigerate him? She has like this massive space. Like she didn't keep the body parts fresh. I don't get that. I don't get that. But I am not a scientist. I am not. So she knows something that I don't, clearly. And all of their bodies, like how does she dispose of them? How does she, are they just there also decomposing? Because again, she doesn't seem to have okay, whatever. We're not diving deeper into that because I could go on for hours about all the things that I'm like, Vicaria, how did you manage to pull this off? But staying on topic, the just yeah, like that the glasses thing makes a lot of sense to me.
And like I said, I was like, I don't know if that was like intentional. It had to have been, right? Like, it's
I
not
feel
just
like
going to
it
be an
had
accident,
to.
but like if my interpretation was, or what how I was taking it was what the director and the writer was going for, and with that imagery for the storytelling. So we're gonna go, yes, I am correct.
Yes, I like this. I like this. Yes.
Oh, and speaking of Vicaria's dad, Donald, I just have to say, when we were first introduced to him, like actually introduced to him, because he gets called down to the school because the teacher sucks, and you love to see a supportive parent and
Yes.
a parent standing up to a teacher and being like, I'm never gonna diminish my kids' shine, and basically like, this is a you problem and my kid's
Yeah.
a genius and you're an idiot.
Yes.
And he was so loving and caring. He's clearly, he has his demons and everything that he's battling. And I thought it was kind of interesting too, to show a parent that has, or a character that has, like, that's using drugs but isn't like strung out and just kind of
Oh my God.
bumbling there. Like, he's still functional, right? Like, they do that lovely family dinner, which was just such a nice, sweet little moment in the movie and everything. And so he's there, whereas in other movies, someone with addiction issues may not have shown up to that, or may have shown up
Yes.
looking strung out or whatever. So I thought this was a really interesting take on that kind of on Donald's character and seeing him still try to be a good parent to Vicaria, but still obviously struggling with his unaddressed, undealt with trauma.
Right. No, it was, again, this is part of the brilliance of the way that that this movie takes on its characters, because you're absolutely right. So many movies, and I think in particular when they're depicting Black characters, especially Black men, it would have been portrayed very differently, where he's strung out and abusive and absent. But in this, he's doing everything he can to hold things together for Vicaria. The drug use is his way to cope, but it's not something that's preventing him from holding down two jobs, raising a child, being there for her when he gets called into school. And the other thing there is that a lot of movies, when they have the child gets in trouble and the parent gets called in, and the parent is Black, the parent is often, you know, starts yelling at the kid and has like this really horrible interaction with the kid. But in this case, he's supportive of his child. Like, he is seething with anger at the fact that he's getting called out of work over something ridiculous that the teacher should have handled better. And in all of this, he is there for his daughter. He does not care about what the teacher has to say. You know, just throwing in also the fact that, like, he's like, oh, you have such a beautiful European last name, which is such a thing. It is such a thing. This whole thing of like, oh, what an interesting last name. You know, like, where does it come from? It's like slavery. Like, what the hell do you think? Like, Jesus Christ. I know you're a science teacher, but do you not know history? Like, what is wrong with you? Did you study under Ron DeSantis? I don't understand your lack of awareness of this.
And it was like just so much secondhand cringe watching. I was like, yes. Why would you fucking ask that? What exactly is wrong with you? But
then again, I mean, we have that video of what's her name, Jennifer Garner, at the round table with Regina King, where Regina King is just talking about something and Jennifer Garner steps in and she's like, do you know where your ancestors are from? Oh my god. If you haven't seen this video, I will send it to you, Jen, because just so you can cringe with me.
Okay.
Because it's like,
I'm cringing pretty hard right now. It's like,
yeah. Yeah, I'm like, did you really have to say that? But she did, whether she had to or not. But yeah, it's something that happens frequently if you have any, you know, visibly Black features. People are like, oh, what an interesting last name. How did you come about it? It's like, I think you know the answer to that. Right. You know, just your question alone should be kind of enough to tip you off. Yeah. But so his anger isn't directed towards Vicaria at any moment. Mm-mm. Even when he finds out that she's been skipping classes and not turning in work, he's like, why aren't you doing more as a teacher? You know, exactly. Why did you call security on a child instead of dealing with her yourself, like a grown-up that you're supposed to be? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like, thank you, Donald, for being that parent.
Exactly. I loved it. With the whole teacher interaction, I mean, it was all beautiful and just fun to watch, kind of just Donald's name. But when he first walks in and he loud drags the chair. I was like, oh, he's not in a good mood. He's not happy to be here. But again, he's mad at the teacher for not doing her job and being an effective teacher, problem resolver, whatever, adult. He's irritated at her. There's no reason why he had to have been called down there.
Right.
And then because there was also when the teacher mispronounces Vicaria's
name. Oh
my
God.
And she corrects her. But then in the meeting with the parent and the teacher mentions the librarian.
And, oh yeah. Miss Padilla.
Yeah. And the way, Vicaria corrects her.
Yep.
It's like, yes. She never stops. I love that. You keep fucking throwing that shit back in that woman's face because she deserves it and a little bit more.
Yes. I mean, the fact that she's like, I'm just going to call you Vicky because it's easier for me.
No shit.
Yeah. Which is like, I think if you think about how many people, particularly, I don't know, just anybody in general who doesn't have very Western names, especially biblical names, they will try to mangle your name into something that fits into their mouth instead of trying to figure out how to pronounce it properly because it's easier for them, supposedly, but mostly because it's a way to show that your name is inferior to their ears. It's like, that sounds really tacky and, you know, foreign. So I'm going to westernize it for you to make your my life easier.
Yep. Exactly. So yeah, it was, the teacher was the worst. So hats off to the actress for playing like the worst teacher.
I always wonder sometimes, I just said always and sometimes, but whatever. I often wonder how actors approach these roles, and they're like, I don't know, man. I don't know that I want to, you know, pretend to be this awful person. And they're like, okay, I'll take one for the team. Mm-hmm. I'll be the one who does this. Because like, can you imagine being forever known? Like if something really takes off, oh God, I don't want to be forever known as like that horrible teacher.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was, yeah. Let's see. Do you want to talk about like Aisha or maybe Chris or anyone else you want to get to?
Yeah. Well, for one, okay. So I have like so many thoughts.
Yes.
Because first of all, okay. So Jerome, I want to talk about Jerome for a second.
Yes.
Because his death broke my heart. This movie is heartbreaking a million times in a million ways. Jerome is this little kid who is starting to fall in with Kango, and Vicaria goes and talks to him and he shows up where at the body storage, at the, you know, the body unit where Vicaria has her cadavers. And he's trying to like build himself up into like this big tough man and whatever, but Vicaria scares him because he's still a little boy. Like he's this tiny little kid, but he has such hopelessness. You know, he says, you know, basically like, what is life worth? You know, like who cares? Who cares if I fall in with Kango? Like my future is sealed from me already. And then he gets shot and killed by the cops, which is, I think, you know, just we're in the midst of a huge epidemic of police killing Black men and boys. It's not new. It's been around for a very long time, for as long as police has existed, because the reason police was invented was to prevent enslaved people from running away, and particularly from rising up to protect themselves and their families. And you see it depicted, it doesn't ever get easier, you know, with every arrest, with every death that you hear about, with every depiction of it, even fictional, it's still heartbreaking every single time. And it still fills you with a sense of hopelessness. And in this case, because Jerome had just said that, you know, like, who cares? You know, but the way that he and Vicaria are looking at into each other's eyes as he's dying, kind of like he's like she's witnessing for him, you know, she's standing there as witness for him, which I think is awful, but also so important, because the minute that we stop paying attention to these things, the names disappear, not the problem.
Right.
You know, like the instinct to not listen to the news anymore. It's like, oh, it's so sad. This is giving me the sads. I don't want to think about this anymore, which I think a lot of particularly white people fall into, where they're like, oh, I just want to have a good day today. You know, I don't want to hear about the tragic suffering of these people. But this moment, the film forces you to look into Jerome's eyes as he's dying. And Vicaria is looking at him as he's dying, you know, kind of, it's a very powerful moment, but it's also very, very sad. And as they're shocking him with the paddles trying to bring him back to life, and then she suddenly gets the idea, like, of course, electricity will bring Chris back. Like, I think that kind of spurs her, you know, kind of like for Jerome bringing back Chris, because they're both falling victims to all of the same societal failings that are causing both of their deaths. So in a way, it's almost like she's not by name, but in a way reviving Chris in service of all of these Black men and boys who are dying. Mm-hmm. And Chris, I mean, Chris dies not through police violence, but because he's pursuing somebody on Kango's behalf to collect. And so he gets shot down in the process of doing that. But still, I mean, all of this is a policy failure, a failure of society that is inflicted on Black children. Mm-hmm. And it's so important to talk about and to not forget that it's happening, because it is happening, and it's not going to stop happening until we do something about it collectively. Mm-hmm. And so, like, so to talk now about Chris, who we don't really get a lot into, you know, in the book, and in the book Frankenstein, you get a lot into the actual monster. Mm-hmm. You know, you get to see kind of his motivations, and in the movie you don't get to see a lot of the motivations, which works very well for a horror film. Mm-hmm. But what you do get to see about Chris is that yes, he was Kango's collections officer. I don't know.
Sure.
Like, he just held that position in Kango Corp.
Collections officer. Sorry, I love it.
Executive level collections.
So you can put that on a business card, right?
He could have put it on a resume, but you know, whatever, man. But you also see him as a little kid. You know, like the first time that you see him, he's a little kid. And then you see a picture of him and Vicaria that Donald has, where they're just sitting on like some steps, like smiling, and they're just, you know, brother and sister hanging out. And then you see him as a monster. And the whole thing with the Frankenstein book is, you know, aside from the whole, you know, I am God angle, is that the way that we're treated is the way that we act. So mm-hmm. Chris is treated as a monster, so he acts like a monster. At first, Vicaria is so happy to see her brother come back to life. And they, you know, the first thing she does is like, I'm going to show you who killed you. We're going to do something about this. Not a very gentle reintroduction into the world, mm-mm. Which, again, she's 13. So she's thinking very, you know, it's like just linearly, like we're going from point A to point B. We're going to get this stuff done. Not thinking through the consequences, not thinking that, you know, she needs to, like, you know, test his cognitive ability, see if he remembers anything. She's just like, okay, she treats him the way that Kango is kind of treating Jamal, just like mm-hmm. as the muscle. Mm-hmm. So she is like, okay, I'm going to show you I'm going to show you what's happening to you. Which, by the way, Kango did not kill Chris. Kango's directive certainly led to his death, but mm-hmm. he didn't directly do that. Now, Chris, at that point, is just doing what Vicaria wants him to do, and he's defending Vicaria from mm-hmm. Curtis, mm-hmm. who shows up and is like, hey, you broke into my car. You took my drugs. That's not cool. Mm-hmm. And scares Vicaria, so Chris goes to defend Vicaria. And then Vicaria, what does she do? She takes off.
Yes.
She just ditches Chris. And I'm like, you brought him back to life, and now you're ditching him as he's trying to save you. Mm-hmm. And then when he comes back, you're freaked out, and you want nothing to do with him.
Yep.
And that, again, you know, you can't do something like that and not take responsibility for your science experiment.
Right.
You know, like, if you make a kitchen volcano and it spills all over your counter, you better clean it up.
Right.
Not that I have any experience telling anybody the age of 9 to clean up after themselves after science. Just throwing that out there. But then, you know, Chris is repeatedly vilified. And there's a whole thing about how messed up it is that facial disfigurement almost always accompanies, it goes hand in hand with being a villain in movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's whenever, okay, the disfigured person definitely did it. You know, that's definitely the bad guy. They're either a punchline or the bad guy.
Yep.
And Chris is horribly disfigured because he's been shot multiple times. He's been on a table, you know, not properly stored under temperature control conditions. Mm-hmm. So all the people see is like, it's an actual monster.
Yep.
And the first time that he's called that is by, I think it's by those cops when he when he kills that. Oh no! They're shooting at him. Like, oh, he's so ugly. He's a monster. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not complying with instructions. What's the other thing? Mind you, he's not doing anything to them.
Right.
But he's not complying with instructions, which to them is enough reason to shoot.
Yeah.
Which is such BS, because how many violent, violent white people are taken under arrest with no incident, mm-hmm. despite not complying with instructions?
Right.
You know, and as he, you know, when he is confronted by them, he's like, I am Chris. I'm going to my dad's. Mm-hmm. That's all he's trying to do.
Yeah.
So they kill him.
Yeah.
So, and they call him a monster. So he's like, I'm a monster. So he takes on the persona of I'm a monster. He goes and sees his dad. And at first his dad is like, oh my God, it's my son. And then the son gets up and is like, whoa, you're not my son. And he gets scared, understandably. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But then because Chris is now a monster, he does a monstrous thing. And he continues to do monstrous things to the rest of his family. Mm-hmm. So there is so much to be said about the way that a label can influence a person's outcome. Mm-hmm. If you call a kid stupid, they're going to grow up thinking that they're stupid. Mm-hmm. If you call a kid lazy, they're going to grow up thinking that they're lazy. And it matters a lot what kids say to each other, which is harder to control because kids can just be cruel. Mm-hmm. But certainly those of us who are, or who should know better, should do better. So if you're, as a society, telling Black men and Black boys, especially Black boys as they're growing up, you are not going to do any better than drug dealing because this is who you people are. Mm-hmm. You're not ever going to amount to anything. You're not ever going to, you know, all of these things matter in how people see themselves and how they grow up to be. So I think that was a very important thing in the whole Frankenstein story in general, but I think this is also why it fits mm-hmm. so perfectly in this story.
Absolutely.
It's because he was called a monster. He took on that persona, and that's a monster he became.
Mm-hmm. And how that kind of mirrors like Jerome's idea of like, this is it, you know, and mm-hmm. how a lot of, from what I've read and listened to, that there are a lot of people within low income Black communities that feel like this is it. It's, you know, it's either like drug dealing or sports scholarship or something. It's like, right. You can only be one of these two things.
Yeah.
Clearly that's not true. So I thought I totally agree with the whole, like, them calling Chris a monster and then Chris kind of taking that and being like, I guess I am a monster. Mm-hmm. And again, yeah, like you said, doing monster things. So I really liked how, as heartbreaking as it was, oh God, and Jerome's death, oh. And the way that that was filmed, and that you didn't mm-hmm. see it, but you heard it, you know? And
yes.
So it's like, I have my closed captions on all the time. And so I'm reading along and I'm seeing like what the officers are saying, like, oh, it's a kid. What was he going to do? And blah, blah, blah. I was just like, oh, fuck. So I liked how it was done where we didn't actually have to see it.
Yes.
But I almost feel like the dialogue was worse.
Right.
Like, your own imagination can sometimes be so much worse than what
absolutely.
You're seeing on screen. And the fact that it is such, like, unfortunately, like a common thing, it's too easy to picture, right?
Yes.
And that's part of the heartbreak. And then Jerome's death with the paddles and everything, and that short moment of Akaria kind of grieving and then having her aha moment at the same
right.
time. It's like, oh yes, we're still in a fantasy
right.
horror universe. So
so but fantasy horror things have to happen now.
Yeah. And then with Chris, the second he refers to himself as a monster was actually kind of heartbreaking because mm-hmm. again, he didn't see himself that way. He was basically like born and then just thrown into the world and
right.
with no instructions. Yes. No testing. So it's, I loved Vicaria's like go gettingness and moving
yeah.
forward. But the fact that she was so like tunnel vision with it and didn't think about these other aspects of like, you know, what, like the brain activity and what are they going to remember and how are they going to behave and this and that. And the way that she just freaks and ran, like, I was a little mad at her for that. Like, girl, you did this. And then she just ran. And then she locks Chris into her, like, her science lab or whatever with like the tiniest little lock. Like,
I know,
dude, that's not gonna hold. Like, I think we just saw enough to know that that's not gonna hold him. Right. And, but again, just that reminder that she's a kid.
Yeah, exactly. Because she's not, and this is part of why also it works so perfectly that it wasn't like a college aged person who did this, because I think a college aged person would have thought this through a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there was this, I was listening to this review on YouTube by a creator called May Muses, and she specifically says, she's like, you know, she didn't follow the Pet Sematary rules that, like, if you bring something dead back to life, it's going to come back worse.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not thinking about the fact that, you know, she's thinking about her brother Chris. She's not thinking about person who's going to kill somebody who didn't pay for Kango Chris.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is not to say that her grief wasn't justified as a little sister, or that Chris was irredeemable, but you gotta really think before you reanimate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's a big takeaway from this movie. Please think before you reanimate.
Yes, I think that needs to be a bumper sticker. And so everyone just kind of remembers.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Everybody's like, we should do a PSA about it.
Yes. This is our PSA about now.
Yes. The more you know.
Oh, but yeah, with Chris, it's like, I felt so bad for him, because on one hand, Jada's like, he's not a monster. It's Chris. And she's able to communicate with him and teach him how to speak, because yeah, now he like can form small sentences, but like, you know, I'm looking for my dad or whatever. He, you know, he's able to put thoughts together and mm-hmm. articulate them to the point where you do know what he's looking for, what he wants. And the fact that like Vicarious so quickly was like, no, he's a monster, and like dismissing what Jada's saying and not listening and not taking that time to be like, what do you mean he can talk and that he's not a monster? Like, what Thank is you. Your experience with him? Because mine was murderous. What are you seeing that I'm missing? So I was disappointed that Vicaria wasn't able to kind of reshift her focus a little bit after that, mm-hmm. especially with the established relationship that her and Jada have and being so close like that, and Jada being her own tiny genius, creepy child.
Yeah, so, because Jada's like, I don't know what you're worried about. I mean, it's Chris, like, who cares? She's gonna teach him how to read. Why are you getting all freaked out about this?
Exactly. So then that's when I started thinking about the Frankenstein in Monster Squad, because he befriends a little girl, because they're kind of on that same wavelength, right? And she's showing him like the pretty flowers and everything, and and they form like this kind of friendship, because he's just kind of has that like child brain in terms of what he takes in and what he's able to process, but that doesn't mean he's unable to take anything in or process it. And spoilers for like a 30-40 year old movie, but like Frankenstein like sacrifices himself to save the Monster Squad and get rid of the worst monster, you know, like Dracula. It's like right. The big bad. So I really liked this, and again, not being familiar with Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, like the original story or anything, I really liked this continued take on a little bit where he's like, he didn't have to be that, right? Like, he easily could have just been like a big monster brother, but like not a monster. You know what I mean? Like, how right. am I trying to say this? Like, they could have taught him and right. worked with him to kind of maybe not be an active member in society, but to still be around and maybe have nice little play dates with Jada, or let Vicaria sit and have a conversation with her brother about something that maybe might be, you know, just right. anything. But she gave up on him so quickly because she was freaked, and I get it. Not, you know, nothing against a teenage girl being scared of her own creation. But oh, it was just so upsetting and heartbreaking, because then at the end,
yeah,
when when she has to finally put him down with just a mega bolt of like electricity, his screams were so
Oh my
heartbreaking.
God, yes.
It was just like, it was like pain, and just like I felt like a wide range of emotions, from just like sadness to anger and confusion. Oh, it was. And I think in that tiny moment too, you realize what Chris could have been capable of.
Absolutely.
Oh, and so I don't
Because
know.
he was still at heart a human, you know? He, like, the potential that was snuffed out twice. And I wonder, I don't know if that plays into it at all, if he's realizing, oh God, I'm dying again. I don't know, like, how much realization there is in him. But it was, especially on rewatch, because the first time around, there's so much going on that I think I didn't really pay attention to, like, what's going on with his screams. But the second time that I watched it, I almost broke down, because I was like, he sounds like he's hurting so much. And I, you know, in a sense, you know, I was relieved that all of the killing would stop, but then I felt guilty for being relieved, because it wasn't his fault. You know, like, he didn't know how to react to the situation, and he was very clearly upset when he killed his father. Because I don't think that he intended to kill his father. His father was just freaked out and was going to attack Chris. So Chris defended himself, but he immediately regretted it. So it's just, oh my gosh. And, you know, so like, with every death that he causes, he builds himself up more and more as a monster, until he's like, I don't know what to do anymore. Like, I'm in this world where I don't. You know, you never get a sense of what's going on cognitively with him. In the Mary Shelley book, the Frankenstein monster threatens to kill Victor's family if he doesn't make him a bride, because he's lonely. So he wants somebody to be with, and nobody will be with him because he's a horrible monster and people think that he's ugly and don't want anything to do with him. And even that's born out of loneliness, but you do get more insight into his thinking and what he's planning on doing. Whereas in this, you don't really get anything from Chris directly, which again works perfectly for a visual horror movie. But I am left wishing we knew more about Chris. And that's the one thing with this movie where I'm left a little bit dissatisfied at the end, is that we don't know more about what's going on inside of Chris. Like, I would have loved to have had a moment where he expresses something.
Something.
Yeah, that would have just, I think, really tied it up a bit better, would have given me more satisfaction. You
Sure.
know?
Yeah.
Although, like, can we talk about the ending for a moment?
Absolutely.
Because, okay, so Jada, poor little traumatized Jada, is still with her family's blood on her face, takes Vicaria back to her house, where she sees her whole family is dead. You know, like, Jada's mom, her sister, her brother, all dead. Aisha was, like, very pregnant, and now, like, it's another life that's gone. And so Jada, just because, again, trauma, she just goes and plays with her blocks, and she's like, well, I'm not worried, you're gonna bring them back, right? Like, well, they just died, they were just here, like, I don't understand. And she's a little kid, you know, like, all of that creepiness kind of goes away in that moment, because she has that innocence of just being a child who doesn't understand how somebody can be gone. And you mean they're never coming back? I don't get it. You brought Chris back, why can't you bring them back? And I don't know. I don't really know how I feel about the fact that Vicaria realizes, because they're fresh, that she can bring them back without the same issues that Chris had. Because on the one hand, it's like, oh, thank God. You know, like, oh, I'm so glad. I'm so relieved, bro. Like, oh
I was not okay for that for
my
those couple of minutes. I was like, no,
Yes.
are you fucking kidding? This is no.
I know. Like, and the first person that she brings back is Aisha, which, you know, and I was like, okay, why not her father? Why not this one? I thought, so I'm trying to like mentally justify it within myself. And I'm like, okay, the father is significantly bigger, so he's probably heavier and they're more difficult to carry. So, okay, it makes more sense that she brings somebody smaller, but why not the brother? Well, you know, we have whatever. I was like, whatever. Okay. La 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 la. I don't want to hear anymore. I don't care. So she brings back Aisha, and it the fact that Aisha gets to say the line "He's alive," and as she's holding her belly.
Yes.
Oh my god! Like the goosebumps.
Oh, right now too. Oh my god.
Right, because it's like, oh, because you associated with Victor saying it to himself, like, you know, like he's alive about his monster coming to life. But no, this is a mother being so relieved that her child is still alive. It's like, oh my god.
Absolutely.
Look at
Oh my
Victor.
God.
Because Chris wanted to name him after you.
Ah!
You know your brother that you just killed again?
What an emotional fucking ending. Oh my God. Just the roller coaster that I was on for all of that. Seeing the bot, I was just like, I have a real hard time with children's death and pregnant women death. So I I can't do it. So when they showed all that, I was very, very angry and upset. I was like, no. And then we get, Vicaria and Jada both kind of haven't taken turns saying weird shit. Cause like Jada's like, they were just here. And Vicaria's like, what? And then Vicaria's like, they're still fresh. And Jada's like, what? And I was like, like they both said what to each other at one point in that little exchange. And that it kind of cracked me up because I was like, you both are saying some off the wall shit, but you also get it.
Right.
So oh God. And so when she brought Aisha back, I was like, oh, thank God. And then I was like, oh yeah. So everything's going to be just fine. She did it. She cured death.
Right. Exactly. And it's okay because Aisha is bigger than Jada. So maybe now they could collectively bring back the dad.
Oh my God.
Oh,
that but was this, so hard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like so much happens in so little time because really like once you hit the point where Curtis dies and Jamal goes off on Kango, like from that point on, the movie is nonstop. Like you cannot take away your eyes at all because everything that happens is so important.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's such a great movie. So well done. The way that it gets you emotionally and you just feel the character's emotions from the anger and the rage towards the teacher to the grief and the sadness of losing the family and then getting the family back and just being like, I'm not okay.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's so lot. Much, but it's brilliant. The cinematography is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like it's this little indie movie, but it is shot beautifully and you can tell that there's so much love poured into this project.
Absolutely.
It's impressive as hell.
It is. And again, everyone needs to go watch this movie and then rate it like a 10 and higher over and over.
Yes.
Create burner accounts. I don't give a shit. This movie needs more attention and more love and respect because it is fucking amazing. And then I jotted something down quick while you were talking and we were talking about like Chris and then his like what his thought process might have been when Monster Chris was being electrocuted. For some reason I was thinking all of a sudden thought like, okay, so Chris's original death is that maybe like a metaphor for incarceration and then how when people incarcerated people are released if they've been in there long enough, or I mean I guess it does it either way, they're not the same. Right. Like
that is a brilliant, brilliant thought.
We hear that a lot from incarcerated people that are released. They don't know how to function in the world. They're not given the proper tools and resources and support to do better, to strive to be better. It's just like, oh, now you're out. Got a report here. Get a job by this date. Everything else is your fucking problem.
Right.
And
oh
so
my
you,
God.
You hear that like a lot of times. It's just they've grown accustomed to being incarcerated and that's now where they're comfortable. So they might go commit a petty crime to go back because that's what they know. I mean, it's even depicted in movies and TV shows. And it's like, yes, that's fiction, but you know, life imitates art, art imitates life, all of that stuff. So I couldn't help but that it just popped in my head while we were talking about it. So what's your take on that? What do you
think? I
think
that's absolutely brilliant. And you know what? Like, because, you know, I don't know about you. Like, I'm all about death of the author. Like, you know, once it's out there, the interpretation is up to us and interpretation is valid. And whether the writer meant it to be a metaphor or not, I think it works beautifully for all the reasons that you mentioned, because prison is inherently dehumanizing. Mm-hmm. You go in there and you are treated as chattel by society and by the guards and everything. You are forced to pay for really basic stuff that should mm-hmm. be provided if you're going to be imprisoned. And then you're forced to work in really crappy conditions to earn pennies for things that are outrageously expensive with like a huge markup. I was just mm-hmm. watching something precisely about that. And the prison experience itself is dehumanizing. And yes, absolutely, when you're released, no matter the length of your imprisonment, and certainly longer imprisonments have a bigger effect. Mm-hmm. But even a short imprisonment is a huge stigma and a huge, it really, you end up being marked by society. Mm-hmm. You know, like how many times on TV do you watch somebody dating and it's like a sitcom and the girl finds out that the guy has been arrested and just like, oh, I would never date somebody who has ever been arrested. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, but what was it for?
Right.
And why, you know, does it really matter? Like, was it drug possession? Because honestly, like, what in the hell?
Aren't we all in possession of some kind of drug or another? Like,
right. Like, why? So, yeah. So, absolutely. I think that, oh, Jen, you're so brilliant. Oh, my God.
Thank you. Hair flip.
But yeah, like, you picked up on, like, the glasses thing and now this. Like, oh, my God, Jen, go write a book. Go write a book.
I'm not a good writer, but I'm a really great talker, so I'll stick with the podcast. Yeah, well, no, I'm a little surprised at myself too for kind of coming up with that. I'm sure it's probably like it. Otherwise, it would have been something I would have thought of during editing, and then just kicking myself like, "Why say it?" So
I'm glad that you brought it up now because it works so perfectly.
It really
does. Yes, absolutely. It's a death that changes him irrevocably. He is brought back, kind of like, you know, bailed out or supported through it by his mm-hmm. sister. But he comes out different and his sister expects him to be exactly the same person he was before all of this mm-hmm. happened. And it is impossible because he is just to the bone a different person.
Yep. Oh, we're so good. We're good at this.
Yeah, but like that was like just absolutely just whoa. Fireworks. Like I am that mind blown emoji right now. Like, here, look at this. Oh,
look at that. Kapoor.
My hair wrap just flew off.
It really did. It was just like, wow. All right. Well, anything else, anyone else that we didn't get to, or anything else that any other notes that you might have?
I think I've covered everything that I wanted to say about this movie, other than reiterating the fact that everybody should go out and watch it and buy a copy and rate it very highly on mm-hmm. everything that you can think of. And tell your mama, tell your friends, tell everybody who loves horror, who doesn't love horror, but you just want them to give it a big, bold rating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do all those things because this movie is so fucking good. So, well, all right. Yeah, I don't have any stray bubbles because this movie is so new. There's not a whole lot of like fun fact trivia out there yet, but I will keep my eyes open because I really like this movie. So,
yes. Fun fact, Jen blew my mind.
Yeah. Fun fact, I blew Carla's mind. So. So we will go ahead and move on to our Midwest goodbye. And we will go ahead and start with the 6 degrees of Nicolas Cage. Did you get one? Did you get there?
Yes, I did.
All right.
I did. I just have to find it. Okay. All right. So I'm going with Chad L. Coleman, who played the father, Douglas. Okay, so Chad L. Coleman was in Monday Night Mayhem with Nick Turturro, who was in World Trade Center with Nick Cage.
Very good. Oh, I love it. It's always like just like a couple of steps. It's,
right?
It's amazing.
Because Nicolas Cage has been in absolutely everything.
Has worked with everyone. So
yes.
I went with Denzel Whitaker, and he was in Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans with Nicolas Cage.
A one-step move. Yes. Amazing. Way to go, Kango.
I had to. I was like, I'm either going to use like Jada or Kango. Cause I'm like, I don't know. Those are other than like the main character. Those were some standout characters for me.
Yeah.
So, all right. And Carla, what has been streaming in your bubble?
Okay. So lately I have been all about, usually I'm not a YouTube person because I like things that are, I don't know, well made. You know, usually I have standards, but not lately.
The world is burning. Fuck it. No one has standards. Exactly. Let's just fucking enjoy it.
Exactly. So I have been streaming a ton of videos from Smosh, and they're all the AITA, the Am I the A-hole, Reddit things.
Oh my God.
And it's like hours and hours of the host Shane Top reading these to two people from Smosh, and they talk about them, they joke about them, they like go into like what they would do, or you know, like why this is so messed up or why it's hilarious. And they're just like, it's just a funny group of people anyway, but like I've laughed so much listening to these. And also I'm developing a crush on this like basically teenager he's 31. Okay, like I'm not actually but like I started watching these and I'm like, oh okay, this is a random white guy, and suddenly I'm like, oh Shane, you seem so nice.
Aww.
Like of course Shane would say that, he's such a good guy. But yeah, that's what I've been doing, just a lot of Reddit stories through Smosh via the narration of Shane Top. That's who I am now.
I love it. Oh my gosh. How much fun is that though? The Am I the Asshole posts. Like they are, I can't hardly read a lot of them because I get to the point where they do the asshole thing and I'm like, I'm done with humanity.
I know. Like, what is wrong with you? Why would you do that to somebody? But yeah, like I'm telling you, the way that the panel does them is hilarious most of the time. And I'm dying laughing. And I'm like, oh my God, I just want to sit there with you guys. I don't even have to say anything. Just watch you guys interact because you're all so funny and hilarious.
Oh, that sounds like fun. I might have to check that out. I get on YouTube. I go through like weird random like YouTube spurts where I'm like, I'm all about watching whatever random ass stuff I come across on YouTube for like months. It's usually pop videos. Let's be honest. It's a lot of pimple popper and stuff like that. It's pretty gross. My family thinks I'm nasty, but I'm like, it looks like butter. So I don't get on YouTube a lot, but I will definitely check that out.
It's a Wisconsin thing because it's a dairy product. So you're like, oh,
oh yeah. But what I've been watching mostly is I started watching Ghost Brothers Lights Out on Max. And it's a ghost hunting show with three black guys. I just had their names. Dalen, Juwan, and Marcus. So I was watching that. And because I love ghost hunting shows, but I'm very, very picky and I hate most of them. And so I'm trying to find new ghost hunting shows that don't piss me off. So Lights Out was all right. I'm just kind of like, there's bits I like, but there's some of the more scripted parts that feel very, very like scripted fake. So I looked it up. This is like their third or fourth series of ghost hunty stuff. So Tubi has their original like first two seasons, just Ghost Brothers, and it's more simplified, more standard of like, you know, you go into the haunted place and blah blah blah. And I've been all about it because I like, they get some pretty good evidence that I like with the ghosty voices and door slamming, and they're funny. You definitely get the sense that like they're friends because they have those moments where they're kind of just shooting the shit, riffing off each other and giving each other shit. So you get that like bestie vibe and you're just like, oh my God, I love you guys. And the kicker is they don't wear all black. like every other douchebag on a ghost hunting show. Like they are
it's so true.
Stylish, right? Like Dalen in one episode was wearing like this nice pink button-up shirt. And it wasn't buttoned all the way either. So you got a little bit of like top chest tat. And I was like,
what's that's hot. I have a thing about like just like that barely exposed chest hair.
Oh yeah, I was like, hi. There was like another episode where Jawan was trying to like sweet talk like a female ghost, so he was doing the deep voice and he was like, so how you doing, you know, get something to say, like, and the guys were like kind of talking like, oh my god, he's gonna like try and hit on the ghost girl to get her to show up. But his voice and his slow smooth talking, I was like, well, hello. And how are you? Now I want to be a ghost and say hello to him. So it's been, I love, like I said, I love that stuff. And these guys have been really entertaining. And now I'm happy I found a few more seasons to watch, because I've already went through all of Lights Out. And then when I was watching that, they were in Wisconsin in a little hotel called Karsten Inn that was supposedly haunted and has since closed down. I don't think it's open anymore. But my husband and I stayed there. And because I was like, I want to stay in a haunted hotel. And we didn't get a lot of like, and do a little bit of ghost hunting. And I didn't get really anything where I was like, yes, that's totally a ghost. But there were a few things where I'm like, that was kind of weird. And one point my husband was like walking down the hall and like nobody else is in this hotel. It was like just us and maybe one other couple on another floor. But we're walking down the hall to our room. And my husband's like, he's like, did you smell cigar smoke? It's like, no, I don't smell any cigar smoke. So then in watching the episode with the Ghost Brothers and them showing photos of like of Mr. Karsten, the owner and operator original, big dude with a stogie. And I was like, oh, shit. So I told my husband that. I was like, I think you did like encounter old man William, old man Karsten and his stogies. And my husband's playing Red Dead Redemption 2 right now, replaying it as a good guy, which is like the lamest shit ever. So he's just like cool.
Oh, great. No. Don't be disappointing. Put the game down and like put your hands to your mouth and be like, no.
Exactly. I'd freak out with me. So so yeah, that's been my latest obsession is the Ghost Brothers.
That's awesome.
So all right. Well, I just I guess that's gonna do it for us today. So obviously I have to thank Carla once again for joining me and suggesting this movie and doing an episode about it and letting me blow her mind.
Yes.
So thank you so much, Carla. And once again, make sure you check out her podcast, Bedwetter Behead, found on a podcast player near you. Thank you to all my lovely bubblies for listening and support the writer's strike.
Yes.
Yes. Bye.
Bye.
If you're enjoying this podcast, be sure to let me know by rating and reviewing wherever you get your podcast fix. Follow me on Twitter at Streaming Bubble. Find me on Facebook and Instagram as My Streaming Bubble. Have thoughts, suggestions, questions, or want to be tolerated? Email me at mystreamingbubble@gmail.com. If you want to show your love and support for this little old podcast in monetary form, search My Streaming Bubble over at buymeacoffee.com and buy me a cheese wedge. And if you want to take that love and support to the next level, head over to Redbubble where you can find and purchase My Streaming Bubble merch. All monetary support goes right back into this podcast, from new recording equipment to night cheese. Thanks for your support and keep streaming.
Like I am that mind-blown emoji right now. Like, here, look at this. Oh,
look at that.
My hair wrap just flew off.